The official reading on America's jobs market shows new strength. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. 214,000 more people were on payrolls last month. The government also reported this morning that the unemployment rate fell slightly from 5.9 to 5.8%. That rate derived from a survey of households was better than expected. It was also not, as so often has happened during the recovery, a smaller percentage of a smaller labor market. The labor force participation rate moved up last month as more people were actively looking for work. For context, on Fridays, we turned to Christopher Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial in New York. Hello, Chris.
Good morning, David.
How do you put all this together? Is the labor market getting better in your view?
Well, certainly this month, that there's no arguing. Usually you can go through this report and find something and say, aha, that's no good. But this time, it's almost everything looks terrific. We've got a lower unemployment rate. We have more people working. There was strength in goods producing industries like manufacturing, as well as services like retail, leisure and hospitality and healthcare. So really a nice, strong across the board report.
That is the key thing, to figure out what all this means for people actually out there looking for work or in the labor force. But what about interest rates? I mean, if the labor market's getting this strong, maybe the Fed might move up rates.
Well, that's right. It's, as always, one of those situations where if things get too good, Wall Street gets nervous. We are seeing some of that today. The Federal Reserve has made very clear they're going to make rate policy next year based on, more than anything else, where the unemployment rate is. There will be some at the Fed who look at that 5.8% unemployment rate and think they're already too late raising rates. So I think it does reinforce the case for rate hikes next year. What's maybe a little bit bizarre about that is the one place we're not seeing a whole lot of improvement yet is wages. Wages were up just 0.1% in October and only 2% from a year ago. There's plenty of room for growth there.
Christopher Lowe at FTN Financial in New York, thank you so much.
Thank you, David.
Now time for the Marketplace Inflation Calculator. As part of our program's 25th anniversary, we've been tracking the odd ways that prices have changed over that period. According to a cellular phone industry group, the average monthly cell phone bill has dropped from an inflation-adjusted $151 back in 1989 to $47 now, a 69% drop. How is that possible? Michael Grubb is an economics professor at Boston College who's studied the cell phone market.
I think there's at least three reasons prices have fallen over the last 25 years. Perhaps the most important is technology gets better and cheaper every year, both the phones that we use and the networking equipment. The second point is that the market's more competitive. In 1989, an American only had a choice between two carriers in any given city. Today, we have four national carriers, so there's more choice. And the third thing, in 1989, there was only one cell phone for every 100 Americans. So 99% of Americans didn't have a cell phone. And it's a pretty good bet that the typical consumer back then was richer and more likely to be able to expense the phone to their employer than would be a typical American.
Yet, using census data, I calculated the total phone bill, residential plus cellular, inflation adjusted, is up 22% over 25 years for the average household.
You know, now many households will have a phone for each member of the family and possibly a landline as well. Even if prices stay the same, if you use more, your total expenditure is going to go up.
And of course, we've been talking here, Professor, average cell phone bill.
And in fact, the average bill in the last couple of years has been relatively stable, but averages don't tell you everything. Hidden behind that stable average price, there's been a big change in pricing recently. It used to be quite a common occurrence that you'd open up your bill at the end of the month and be perhaps surprised or even shocked by a bill of not of $70 a month you were expecting, but $100, $200, $300, $400.
Many of us have felt that wonderful moment when that happens, but you're saying the number of surprises are down.
Number of surprises are down. Now, if you use up your allowance of minutes or text messages or data, they have to send you a text message alerting you so you can stop calling before you run up high overage fees.
I thought they were doing that out of the kindness of their heart. I've gotten those warnings.
It was a voluntary agreement, but I think under pressure from the FCC. And I think it's not a coincidence that since that went into effect, all the major carriers are now offering unlimited talk and text. So now that they can't surprise you with the overage fee, they've given up trying to charge it at all.
Just don't take that cell phone overseas, because then everything changes. I don't even want to discuss what happens when you do that. Michael Grubb, assistant professor of economics at Boston College, who studies the cell phone market. Professor, thank you.
You're very welcome. It's been a pleasure.
All of our Marketplace Inflation Calculator stuff is online, from smoked salmon prices over the last 25 years to the cost of driving to the price of food in college cafeterias. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.